This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
There she is.
Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, David.
Nomi Fry writes about television and social media and pop culture in all their infinite forms. And lately, she's been writing about what's happening on reality television. So, Nomi, I know we're going to talk about reality TV in general, and it's got a kind of broad and interesting history. What was the one that first grabbed you?
I mean, probably, you know, the very first one was when I was a young teen, and it was probably The Real World, which, you know, grabbed everyone, I think, and was on MTV. And it was the first show that kind of took the premise of let's put all of these, you know, these seven strangers, as it famously says, seven strangers picked to live in a house and have their lives taped. And it was fascinating. So yeah, so that was the first show that grabbed me. And now here we are today. And actually, we've just hit a kind of historical milestone in the history of reality television, which is that The Kardashians, after 20 seasons, has finally come to an end. The last episode aired just about 2 weeks ago. And I do want to talk about The Kardashians because they were probably the most influential reality television show to present to us the gambit that everything is worthy of of documentation.
There's a lot of talk about salads.
And
I can't find my cell phone. Where's my cell phone? There's a lot of discussion about that.
You know. Yes. There is something calming, and I think this is generally true of reality television, but certainly of The Kardashians, of kind of letting go of your own dramas and tensions and stresses and turning to someone else's.
Right. So if I'm watching a cooking video on YouTube, that's doing that trick for me while this is doing this for you.
And for that, there is another very beloved show, and it's the Great British Baking Show, known as the Great British Bake Off.
Everybody is so nice. It's so nice to each other.
There is a very kind of by now famous moment where one of the contestants becomes quite upset because his baked Alaska didn't set. He throws it in the trash, known in England, of course, as the bin. And everyone is very shocked. He threw it in the bin.
Can I just say this guy has fantastic hair, too?
Yeah, his name is Ian.
Okay, let's see Ian. Let's click on that.
Did you have a problem with your sponge?
No.
Did you have a problem with your meringue?
No.
Did you have a problem with your ice cream?
Yes.
So where's your sponge? In there? Mm-hmm. We could have tested that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't cope with the situation very well.
Okay. I think you know that it got the better of you. It was just a moment of your life that you want to forget.
Yeah.
Is that right?
It is. I regret it.
Because, you know, we all make mistakes, and we would have liked to see that sponge.
We would have liked to have seen the sponge, but he threw it in the bin.
He looked devastated.
He was
absolutely devastated.
It was a devastating moment.
What else should I take a look at?
The Real Housewives franchise. It's going on 15 years now. It's incredibly successful, and it's just a cornucopia of you know, rich ladies who clawed each other, right?
I have a theory, though, on Housewives. It seems to me, because everybody misbehaves and they yell and scream at each other and pull each other's hair and do things that seem pretty atavistic, and it seems like a way to watch something so that you feel superior to them, that they're acting very badly, and then therefore you feel okay, I'm not that. I'm not doing that. I'm behaving better than that.
I think that's definitely true of reality television in general, of a lot of reality television, where it's probably not the nicest thing to admit that this is something that we would like to see. But yeah, but it's like going to see like going to the boxing ring, right? Going to see the fight. Like, what's that about, right?
Fair enough. But
I mean, just, you know, but there's also sympathy there, David. There's also sympathy.
There is?
It's not just, I think so. Yes. You find yourself feeling, identifying yourself with some of them. So a good way, I think, to enter into this universe is The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. It aired during the pandemic. And my colleague Doreen St. Felix wrote a really excellent TV column on it. And one of the things she pointed out in it, which I agree, is that it's interesting to see how The Real Housewives franchise has kind of like marched with the times, right? So there are some much more kind of au courant discussions of race that are starting to enter into the show, which is quite interesting. And okay, so there are two characters. One is a Black Pentecostal woman, and she is a leader in her church. And her nemesis this season is Jen Shah, who is Polynesian and Muslim. And in the clip we're going to listen to, Jen Shah is recounting this skirmish they had to her husband, who is Black.
Mary all of a sudden freaks out and says, "I would never say the things you say. You're a hoodlum."
"I'm so sorry, honey."
I was like, "What is wrong with you? Like how you you say, oh, if I go to a 7-Eleven and there's Black people, I go to a different 7-Eleven?" Baby, I was so hurt, because guess what? That's my son, my nephew, my family that's at that 7-Eleven that you won't go to because you're too...
These are kind of important conversations that are happening, but they are also used as a cudgel in the kind of power play that happens anyway among these ladies. It's just that the discourse has changed. So I think it's a really interesting and kind of like new way to think about the housewives, as kind of incorporating these conversations into their usual conflicts.
Do you have a last pick for us?
Yes, I do. So one last show that I think is fascinating. I've watched it some. I myself want to watch more of it, but there's just so many seasons and so many spinoffs, it's been hard to catch up. It's called 90 Day Fiancé, and it's on TLC. And the concept is that these are couples. One of them is American. The other one is from another country. And the idea is that the foreigner comes to America to be with their betrothed, I guess, or at least girlfriend or boyfriend. And they have to get married within 90 days because those are the conditions of the K-1 visa.
Huh.
And so the stakes of the drama here are bureaucratic, right? Which is kind of amazing because it's the drama of everyday life and it's about normal people. We were going to watch a clip in which a character who's from Tunisia goes to talk to a lawyer to understand what marrying his American girlfriend might mean.
Married within 90 days. If you don't want to get married, you're going to have to leave the United States.
I want to know how long time it will take till I have that, I don't know how to say it, the green card.
Now, sometimes it could be a few months or 8 months, 10 months, a year. It just depends.
But I don't know why it takes so long time.
There's a lot of fraud, and the immigration folks are concerned about that.
So that's kind of straight up drama.
Yeah.
It just seems, even just talking with you this brief time, that the range of these shows is a lot greater than I had any idea of, that it wasn't just kind of my mind taking a vacation and watching people look for their cell phones or wallpaper their walls.
Yeah, I mean, there's that too, and it has its place.
Sure. But does it affect you? Does it have greater power in your view as a reality show as opposed to scripted drama?
Not necessarily. Each of them has its own power, I guess. There is something quite affecting about seeing, and you know, problematic often, about seeing real people suffering, mm-hmm. you know, confused in dire straits, and while all the questions about the kind of ethics of it still stand, and these are things that I ask myself, and sometimes I feel like some shows cross some lines. I do think that looking at people, you can really learn a lot, you know? People look to television, whether it's scripted or not, to tell them about how life is lived.
The New Yorker's Nomi Fry. You can read her on reality television and much more at newyorker.com.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.